there, Yag here. Before we get on to today's episode, I want to talk to you about a podcast that I've been listening of late. It's called the Gain, Grow, Retain podcast, hosted by Jeff Brunsbach and Jay Nathan, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. Gain, Grow, Retain is built to inspire SaaS and technology leaders who are facing day-to-day challenges of scaling. Hosts Jeff and Jay share conversations about growing and scaling subscription businesses with a customer-first approach. Being a person from marketing and sales background, I personally enjoyed the episode on why you should be running an advocacy program and how to get started. If you were to listen to this podcast, I would highly recommend you to start with this one. Once again, listen to Gain, Grow, and Retain wherever you get your podcasts. By the way, this podcast is also brought to you by Avoma, the number one meeting lifecycle assistant. Every meeting has a lifecycle, the set of things that you do before the meeting, during the meeting, and after the meeting. What if there was an AI assistant that could automate all your low-value tasks and let you focus on the things that really matter to you and keep you productive? That's what Avoma does for you. To learn more, check out www.avoma.com. And now, to our show.
Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. And this is me, your host, Yag. In today's episode, we are going to discuss marketing skills. We are going to focus on the key competencies marketers need to develop to stand out, make an impact, and of course, get promoted. And to discuss that, today we have with us one of the best in the marketing world, Stacey Danizer. If you are a marketer and are on social media, which is pretty much every listener of the show, you probably have heard of Stacey. Stacey is the founder and CEO of Shake Marketing Group, a fractional CMO consultancy for Fortune 500 B2B business units in technology and telecommunications. Prior to founding Shake Marketing Group, Stacey spent 15 years leading marketing strategy, field marketing, and sales activation programs inside various Fortune 500 companies. She is also an author, advisor, and mentor to marketers at fast-growing B2B organizations. Oh, and a fun fact, Stacey shares her birthday with Queen Elizabeth. So, Your Highness, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Yes, thank you so much for that intro.
Awesome. All right, so let's get started. Let's start with a million-dollar question. You know, when you do a simple scroll on LinkedIn, there is so much advice ranging from people who have had 20 plus years of experience to 20 days of experience. And funny enough, every advice pretty much sounds the same fundamental stuff. And that's something pretty much everybody knows. So in this world of sameness, you know, in the name of being different, what does being different actually mean? You know, how can a marketing leader stand out and be unique and do something meaningful?
Yes. So it's a great question. I'm going to use an example. And this is actually research that was based on our book, Standout Marketing. And that research started because we were noticing a trend happening within the certain industries that we worked. And so we took the telecom industry and we looked at the top 30 global players in the telecom industry. And we took a scrape of their Twitter feed and their product pages and their website.
Right.
And what we found was that every single one of them was telling the exact same story. They were using very generic business terms. Those were the most overused words. They were talking way too much about themselves. You know, we have a large footprint. We have 24/7 support. We have a team of experts.
Right.
And then there was lofty promises with no proof points. So in telecom especially, and I'm sure you've seen this, a lot of technology companies promise, you know, digital transformation. So, you know, claims to transform an entire company, the customer's business, but then really there's no bridge or depth to that. The answer was, okay, great. Yeah, I want to transform my business. But the answer is, well, then, you know, buy our product. So, extremely, extremely weak. And so we were really curious about this phenomenon and why this was happening. And rather than look at, you know, the marketing fundamentals of, you know, do marketers know how to do positioning? Do marketers know how to do segmentation and targeting? Are marketers, you know, thinking the difference between differentiation and distinctiveness? We didn't look really more on that, I would call, fundamental skills level, but what we were interested in was the competencies that today's modern marketers and salespeople, for that matter, are developing. And what we found after talking with marketing and business and sales leaders across the US and the UK was that there was a competency gap. And this is really, you know, the difference between a skill and a competency. Skill is what you need to do your job well. So do you know how to do positioning? Competency is then how you take that knowledge and apply it and how you show up in your job to be successful.
Right.
And so while a marketer may know how to do positioning, the reality is they're not implementing that within an organization. And what we found was there were really five key competencies that started to emerge that standout marketers and companies and salespeople have that others do not.
That is amazing. Can you delve a little deeper on what those five are? Basically, what I'm trying to understand is that, you know, if as somebody who's joining, say, a SaaS organization as a leader, and if they want to make sure that, you know, they position their company uniquely, or, you know, right now, if you look at it, pretty much everybody looks the same. Everybody is using words like, you know, orchestration, transformation, blah, 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 which is more towards themselves, as you said. But what does it really take to, you know, stand out and be unique?
Yeah. Yes. So we called this competency framework, it's the acronym VALUE.
One of the most overused words in the marketing industry, VALUE.
100%. Yeah. I mean, and in fact, our first book was called Valueology, which was about how to understand and communicate your value proposition.
Right.
Let me just sort of go on a side tangent for a second that's also true. Value is the most overword and most misunderstood business term. And simply, it's because value, like beauty, is in the eye of the beholder.
That's well said.
And if you start to think about that from a marketing standpoint, now it becomes really hard and really complicated, because, you know, that's where we've kind of scratched the surface with personalization, but really value is so much deeper than just, you know, personalizing somebody's name or serving them up a few products that might go well with other products they've purchased. And so, but we like to remember, and why we went back to this value competency framework, is that fundamentally, if you think about what the marketer's job is, it is to uncover and help communicate and deliver customer value. And I think a lot of marketers have lost sight of that, because they're brought in to do usually a more tactical role, kind of in the communication space or in the promotional space, and are almost uninvited to some of these strategic conversations that are happening at the business level. So this is just, you know, why are companies in business? It's to provide value to not only shareholders, but also their customers, their employees, their partners, their suppliers, the community. So that's kind of taking it a step back and just reminding people, you know, why are you in the marketing role? So right. With that, the V stands for visionary. And this is being able to foresee potential changes in the broader business environment and being able to really share those with customers. So I think COVID was a perfect example of where you saw some companies rise to the top that were connecting the dots. They were looking at what was happening in the macro environment, and they were reaching out proactively to inform their customers and help kind of guide their customers and be considered, you know, almost like the thought leader in that space. That was on one hand. On the other hand, you had a lot of other companies that were just waiting and seeing what's going to happen. We're not ready to put out a statement. We're not ready to do anything. And this was, you know, a great example when you started getting those emails, the first one that you got that said, hey, we really care about you. We're checking in. By the, you know, 50th one that you got from the neighborhood, you know, deli that you haven't visited for the last year, it's like, okay, thank you for being concerned about my well-being and my health. But that's like an example of kind of jumping on the bandwagon. Some people were at the forefront of that. Some people were following the leader.
Right.
So that's the visionary part. The A stands for activator. And marketers are traditionally really good at activating. I mean, if you think this is kind of the department that makes it happen, right? Marketers have traditionally a very long list of things to do, a lot of priorities, a lot of balls in the air. But another piece of activation is being able to get buy-in to the most important initiatives to drive growth in the business. So, you know, you're putting on your internal marketing hat and getting the collaboration from all the people that are needed to, you know, all the stakeholders in your project that are needed to move things forward. So that's being able to work with the product team, the sales team, the executive team, maybe the customer success team, right? Your peers in marketing, and getting everybody on the same page to make things happen. So it's not just executing in a silo. And I'll go into some detail. We could talk later about, you know, how do you start to develop these.
Yeah.
The L stands for learner. So, you know, marketers, and especially everybody here on this podcast is already, you know, doing a great job of this, where it's constantly, how are you staying in tune with what's happening in not just your market and how your market and your industry is evolving, but with your customers, with your competitors, and with your job role, right? I mean, these are kind of four areas that are constantly evolving, and being able to have your pulse on that. And one of the impediments to learning that we typically hear, especially for marketing, the marketing organization, is I don't have time. You know, it's, I don't have time to learn. I don't have time to listen to anything. I don't have time to take any classes. And I've seen people work themselves out of a job just on this one piece alone, because they stopped learning.
Can't agree more. Absolutely.
The U stands for usefulness, which is, you know, I like to think of usefulness as a bridge almost, that you have, you know, your company on one side and you have your customer on the other. And the bridge in the middle is marketing's job to build. And you build that by being useful to your customer. If you want them to come over and sort of see how your product fits into their world, it's serving up useful content, right? Useful conversations. It's having two-way dialogue, not just sort of that one-way push and product jargon that we see in a lot of companies. And so this is constantly stopping and saying, are we being relevant and practical and useful for our customers? Are we helping them? And, you know, there's a whole bunch of stats out there that show, you know, B2B buyers, while you may say, yes, we're creating something that's useful, the number one thing that B2B buyers want from their sales interactions is for somebody to understand their business and to connect the dots for them. So I think a great idea here is to look at how well you're doing the legwork for your customer. Are you taking the guesswork out? And I think there's a lot of things, a lot of opportunity for marketers here, just sort of in this area alone to differentiate.
So can we say, is this like establishing relevance?
Yes. Yep. It's establishing relevance, but it doesn't just have to be fully unique. It doesn't have to be something completely, you know, when people think of relevance, sometimes it's, you know, they want to go so far as to say, well, we have to be a thought leader and we have to have a unique perspective and we have to do all this. But in reality, one thing like that could be extremely useful that I don't think enough companies do is just curating content.
Right.
There's a lot of great content out there, and putting yourself in the customer's shoes and thinking about how much they are inundated already with content from trying to decide on a specific solution. And the fact that you know, just doing the work to curate content and to say, look, we found the three best guides. Here's the things that you need to know. We've already summarized it for you. Here's the pros. Here's the cons. Let us have a conversation because we understand the landscape. We know it's hard to make a decision. You know, we want to help guide you through the process. Nobody's really doing that, right? They're all just kind of publishing their own perspective and their own point of view. They're doing it in isolation, realizing that the customer's consuming hundreds of other pieces of content in their decisions.
Right.
And then finally, the E stands for evaluator. So this is the ability to know what's working and what's not. It's being analytical, right? It's knowing what to do with the data. We've been talking about big data for a really long time. And there's kind of two parts to that. One, are you collecting the right information? And then two, do you know what to do with it? Are you using the data to make decisions? Are you looking at your campaigns and your marketing tactics and your budget in a way that helps tie back to the company business goals and what you're trying to achieve? And being willing to accelerate on the areas that are working and kill projects that are not working, right? We have a lot of examples of projects that people start, they lose their patience, they don't wait to see the result, or maybe they had something wrong and they didn't tweak it, and that the project sort of continues to live, even though it's not working because it was the CEO's idea, for example. So this is having a little political savviness as well, being in this role, so that you're looking more objectively and being able to take people's opinions for what they are.
You know, this is so amazing that you've been able to pull so many different strategic aspects and crystallize into five simple philosophies. That's really, really amazing. I'm sure, you know, it took a lot of time and effort and immense amount of research to arrive at this. That's fantastic. But what I also want to understand here is, like, I'm sure you've interviewed a lot of candidates throughout your career, you know, across different companies to understand how they work and even, you know, to get them onboarded. So what I'm trying to get through here is there are certain skills and then there is this credibility aspect, you know, things that make you feel and say that, hey, yes, I can rely on this person to take the organization forward. And everyone knows that when you look at marketing, they talk about this endless list of skills where they talk about, hey, you need to know copywriting, you need to know community building, blah, blah, blah. But talk to us about what are some of the shifts that a marketer needs to make to gain that credibility with the CEO or the founder of the company, especially in a startup kind of an environment.
Yes. Yeah. I love this topic so much because I mentor a lot of marketers on this very subject. And so we have a community for B2B marketers called SOAR Marketing Society, where we talk about these topics. And I'll tell you, it's not about understanding marketing tactics, right? It's not about becoming an expert in SEO, for example. It's really, you know, there's kind of three different areas that I would say somebody could do to figure out kind of where they stand and to start to build credibility. The first is knowing what your role is. And this one is interesting because, you know, there's marketing job descriptions out there, and on the face value, you may say, well, of course, it's everything listed in my job description. I have found that a lot of companies are just copying and pasting from various job descriptions, and then they make their own job description. And it, you know, that's why some of these job descriptions read like they're looking for a unicorn, because they're trying to find one person who can do all this stuff. And it's usually because somebody who doesn't really understand marketing put that job description together. And so I like to start with asking. This is just a simple exercise you can do. You can ask your CEO, you can do some interviews with your salespeople, with your product team, with, you know, who you consider to be your stakeholders, and to say, what do you think the role of marketing is? What does good look like in this role? And some themes will start to emerge, and you can quickly figure out, does that person or people expect marketing to be a strategic member of the team or to be a tactical execution arm of the team? And so, you know, I worked for five different Fortune 500 companies. I started my career in consumer marketing. And in consumer marketing, I would say that we definitely had more respect and were more valued as a strategic business department and unit. And it's because we managed a really large budget, but we were responsible for sales. I mean, it was marketing, and then you go kind of direct to the sales, the sales function, direct to consumer. You maybe had like a call center that was there to take calls and to place orders, but otherwise it was direct to consumer. When you start to get into B2B, you now have to go through the sales organization. So it goes marketing to then sales to then the customer. And because of that, in a lot of organizations, marketing is viewed as sales support because they don't have direct access to the customer. Everything that they do has to kind of go through the sales team. And so, you know, starting with understanding what is the perception and the role of marketing in your organization is a really great way to know like what you're really up against, right? You know, is how do you start to build credibility? And in my personal experience, in my career, you know, I always started with the sales organization, building a relationship with the sales leaders, starting to attend their weekly meetings and listen on the sales, you know, as they're going through the sales funnel. I attended sales training so that I was always like the lone marketer sitting in the sales methodology training where they're teaching everybody how to sell, not exactly what to say, but how to sell.
Right.
And so, you know, that helped me earn credibility because then they were like, oh, she understands. She's here to help us. And so when I started having my own, you know, ideas and needed their help and their support to execute campaigns and to get things to work, they were more willing to do that because it wasn't seen like, oh, marketing is a separate department. They're doing their own thing. They don't get it. They don't understand how hard it is to be a salesperson. So that's a good way to start to build credibility is kind of, that's number one, knowing what your role is.
Right.
The second is all about knowing the customer. So this is really fundamental to the job of a marketer, but you know, I'll ask the question on the podcast here, you know, when is the last time you talked to customers? When is the last time you did customer research? Do you have customer research in your marketing budget? This was another sort of surprising thing to me when I started in consumer marketing and went over to B2B that we always in consumer had money set aside for customer research. We did focus groups. We did, you know, we hired companies to phone call people. We did design and copy testing all the time before we would go spend any money to launch a product or to, you know, do a giant ad spend. We did testing and got customer feedback and customer research. On the B2B side, that was almost considered a nice to have. You know, no, we don't have any money in our budget to do customer research. And I think that's, you know, fundamental to a marketer's role is to fight for that and to get that added back in. I mean, most of the problems that exist in the sea of sameness that we talked about, and the reason there is no differentiation is because that step is skipped. Because the companies don't really understand their customers and they don't know how to talk to them in a unique or different way, fully sort of putting themselves in the shoes of the customer.
Right.
So maybe they're buying a generic research report. Well, guess what? All of your competitors just bought that same generic research report. So you guys are all kind of starting from the same baseline.
Right.
And this is the number one request as well from CEOs that they want their marketing teams to do, which is to be the voice of the customer internally. If there's one department that should be sort of playing that role, it's the marketing department.
100%.
And so, you know, that's the piece here. When you invest in customer research and when you start to be able to speak on behalf of the customer and constantly representing the voice of the customer internally, your credibility goes way, way up and you start getting invited to meetings because they now all of a sudden you have a pulse on the one thing that really matters, which is how are customers going to react to this?
Right.
So, and I've seen that personally happen. So I would say it's phenomenal credibility boosting. And also all of a sudden you're seen sort of as more strategic because you can represent that side. And then finally, number three is know the business. So, you know, I can't tell you how many marketers I talk to where they don't necessarily know what the revenue goals are. They don't know which products are profitable. They don't know where the areas of focus are and how the CFO is looking at the business. And so this piece is kind of really going back to kind of that internal credibility, being able to speak the language of the business. Right. I mean, marketing has invented their own language with all of the acronyms. I mean, we almost need, you know, a dictionary to give to people to work in marketing these days, but nobody else aside from the marketing department uses that. So they don't care about these terms that we have invented. They're looking at, you know, revenue, sales, EBITDA, right? Yeah. Expenses. It's like really business language versus marketing language. And so when you start to spend time with your finance person, and that's basically what I ended up doing was, because this wasn't natural to me. I mean, I went into marketing because I wanted to work on fun projects, right? And be creative. And I liked the sales piece and I wanted to create something and sell it. And I didn't necessarily go into marketing because I wanted to do finance, you know, financial equations. And so I had to sit down with the finance person in one of the organizations I worked with and have them, okay, explain this to me, right? Like they would sit down with me and we would have to go through budget reconciliation and they would explain what they were looking at and why this was important and why we needed, the timing was interesting. And so it really helped kind of give me perspective on how the business is being measured and what I needed to do to then be able to communicate. If I needed something, if I wanted budget, like I had to communicate in those terms and make it relevant because those are the people that were approving my spend. So that piece is just, I don't think enough marketers really spend time knowing the business, and we're expected to, we're really expected to know this, but we don't necessarily get training. So we have to go find it on our own, right? Or find those people internally that will help us
Yeah.
understand this stuff.
you know, I'm so loving this last story that you said, spending time with the CFOs almost, you know, gave me the pictures of Erin Brockovich, like, you know, a paralegal getting to know the legal side. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, out of the things that you said, one thing that I really, really loved is the part about talking to your customer. You know, that is something I do have, you know, two sides to that, which I would like to, you know, ask you to talk about. Like, say, for example, if you look at social media, everybody says, talk to your customer. And trust me, I do believe in it. And I'm 100% for it. But here's the thing, right? I'll not probably start by asking every marketer in my team to talk to customer, because it'll become chaotic. I'll rather give people access to, say, a product like Avoma, which is like a conversation intelligence tool, where marketers can listen to the prospect and customer conversations and first get the insights. Try to understand, you know, what a prospect is asking to your AEs and what your customers are talking to your customer success people, so on and so forth. And then over a period of time, you know, maybe once they get enough practice to talk to customers, then maybe they can do that. But tell us from your experience, how does a marketer become the voice of the customer internally? What does it take?
Yes. Yeah. I think that's a really great perspective. And I completely agree. When I see this advice out there that every marketer should be talking to customers, of course, I put myself in the shoes of the customer.
Right.
You think your customer wants 600 people from your company reaching out?
Right.
Absolutely no. And then if you multiply that by all the different other vendors and suppliers they're working with, right? All of a sudden, it's like, you can imagine a customer is going to say yes the first three times. And then all of a sudden it's going to be no, 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 shut the door.
Exactly.
And so I think there's a couple of things. One, I love your advice to read transcripts or to sit in on meetings with both the sales team and the customer service team, because it does start to give you a perspective of what are some of the issues, what are the questions that are coming up, and you can start to draw patterns. I mean, really, that's the whole sort of point of this, right, is to draw patterns.
In fact, I started to do that, right? So I used to, you know, typically hear these calls on my jogs, so that, you know, in that 1 hour, I'll hear a couple of calls, and that would give me ideas to even come up with content.
Exactly. Yes, I love that. Because especially if you start hearing things three or four times, it's like, oh, this is obviously a question that most people have. Let's make an article about it, right? Or there's a better way that the salesperson or the customer service rep could answer that question. Let me work on some key points and bullets that they can talk about next time. And so there's definitely some ahas that could be done by that. I think the other piece is, I would recommend that the marketer go through product training or sit with the product team. You know, again, I worked for big organizations. We would hire new salespeople, and they would go through sometimes 2 to 6 weeks of product training, where they were getting all the details. I mean, we sold hundreds of products. And so they were learning, and they were expected to learn all the different products we offered and how to sell every single one of them. And it was like so much information, right? All the features, all the benefits, all the ideal customer profiles for every single product. But marketers, on the other hand, don't get any of that. Right? They just start in an organization, they're expected to go produce content. And meanwhile, they really don't understand the product. You'll never really earn the right to talk to customers and have a meaningful conversation until you understand what you sell, right? And what your customers are even buying. So I would recommend, you know, if your company does product training, to ask to attend that or sit with somebody on the product side to help really dive deeper and understand the product. So that's one thing. And then the other thing, I think, you know, interviewing and talking to customers really is a skill. I actually started school to become a journalist. I sometimes I'd interview customers for my clients, and I always kind of put my journalist hat on, because it's really trying to get curious and uncover and understand the story.
Right.
And really dive deeper, right? And not ask those surface level questions, but now trying to get a little bit of a deeper understanding about what's going on in the customer's world. And you really cannot kind of appreciate or craft those questions if you don't first understand the customer's business and then also what you sell, right? Otherwise, this is where marketers, by the way, who have access, especially in the form of events, where they're sitting potentially with prospective or current customers, and they have access to them, but they're just not prepared to ask intelligent questions So they default to things like, you know, what did you think about the event? And, you know, was this, did you like the food? Or, well, you know, would this type of email or this type of content be useful for you? Right. It tends to be very like tactical in the marketing world instead of like insightful conversations about where the industry is headed, right? Or how these products might fit into their world.
Yeah.
So I have seen there's kind of two, I don't have them off the top of my head, but there's two people that are really trying to build some education around how to teach marketers to do this. So it's something, you know, where you can develop the skill. And then third, as I already just mentioned, it would be to budget for customer research.
Right.
I mean, there's a reason to hire somebody to do it. One is just the skill set, as we just talked about, but two is to get sort of a neutral but unbiased view, right? A lot of times customers don't feel necessarily comfortable sharing all of the details with somebody that represents or works for the company. They don't want to get anybody fired. They don't want to, you know, step on any toes. They want to see you succeed, right? They want your product to be better. And they want to give you real feedback because, I mean, they're rooting for you, right? They're paying you and they're rooting for you to succeed. But sometimes it's hard as a person, a company representative, to have a neutral view. And the customer knows that, right? So they're a little more guarded in their information and what they're willing to share. And so sometimes it's good to just bring in a neutral person to say, look, I'm going to give you an unbiased view of what your customers really think and what they said, so that it's not looking as like an attack on the product team or an attack on the sales team or an attack on the, you know, operations team, but it's more just presented in a neutral view.
Absolutely. This is amazing. You know, I really, really love the fact that it's so practical. You know, at the end of the day, it also reminded me of a lot of these conversations at events, which could be a lot more productive, you know, where you can go ahead and understand what somebody is trying to solve for, what their vision is, how they are going about certain things, and how you can be a part of it. And if we waste that precious opportunity by, you know, some lame conversations, it doesn't help anyone. I absolutely love this. With that, let's take a moment to thank our sponsors, HubSpot. From ride sharing to file sharing and everything in between, if you use an app or website to engage with your customers, you know that your platform needs to be able to keep up with their needs. HubSpot is trusted by enterprises and entrepreneurs to keep up with customer needs and deliver a seamless customer experience no matter the interaction. With easy-to-use web editing tools, HubSpot helps your team publish and update your website with ease. And with the developer-quality, code-free drag-and-drop website editor, anyone on your team can update pages and edit content, helping your customers access your site updates as soon as they're ready. Learn how your business can grow better at HubSpot.com. You know what? I would also love to go a level deeper because you spoke about getting somebody in, training the product and all of that. I would like to ask you this. If you had a new marketing hire, what would be the top three things that you would include in their onboarding as a fundamental?
So probably, well, let me just tell you my filter. I mean, let's go back to that value competency framework. You know, I really think a lot of marketing teams need to look at this and to figure out, do we have a well-rounded skills on our team? Because I think it starts to identify some gaps. And we're in the process of rolling out a self-assessment. It will be ready soon. It's based on the book Standout Marketing. And we want to give marketing individuals as well as leaders a perspective on where the gaps are for themselves as well as for their team. That's kind of where I would start, is to say, you're already really good at activating, right? You're good at project management. You're good at collaborating with your peers. You're good at all that. Let's see where else your gaps are and maybe sort of start there. But just my filter, like my number one filter for hiring people is that learner. If somebody is eager to learn, they know how to learn, they love to learn, then I can teach them anything. And so that's really my filter for even hiring anybody or progressing the conversation is how well they are dedicated to learning and to improving. I'm a very big fan of, like I said, getting marketers to understand big picture and strategy. I'm in the process actually of building a program right now to teach marketers how to think more strategically to be to earn that credibility, to get a seat at the table, and to move kind of out of that tactical order taking role. And so because I'm so passionate, I spent, you know, more than half of my career on the strategy side and the other half on execution. So I see how both of these things work together. I love spending time to make sure that the marketer understands the big picture, that they know why we're doing things. And it's not just coming in to start executing, but really getting them to see how it fits in, because all of this is integrated, right? And I always go back to putting the customer in the middle and really understanding they don't care that you have a separate person who sent them an email, and then you have a separate person who manages right. the website, and you have a separate person who created that thought leadership paper, and then you have a separate person in sales and a separate person in customer service. They just view you all as the company.
One brand experience, yeah.
Exactly. And so I love to just constantly go back to that and remind people that while your job might be to create content, right, or your job might be to manage social media, you have to look at it from the customer standpoint. They don't know that it's a separate person managing this stuff. And so they want it to feel seamless.
Yep.
And so just I spend a lot of time on thinking strategically and seeing how to connect those dots and understanding why we're doing things, because sometimes you have to kill projects right in the middle of it. Right. And it's not just all about execution. It's about executing the right thing. So that's probably where I would start.
Right. You know, I love how this connects to gaining credibility, where you spoke about, where you said, you know, it's about understanding the business, product, and the customer. It kind of comes down to the same three fundamentals for this as well, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Love that. All right. So now that, you know, we are inching towards the 35-minute mark of this conversation, let's go to the next phase, which is called the rapid fire. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to shoot 5 lightning questions at you. The questions might be short, but the answers need not be. And this is my humble attempt to see if I can put you on the spot. So are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So here's question number one. What is one qualifying question that you ask your potential clients where you're always surprised by the different answers that you get?
Gosh, it varies so much because I sell different things. I think, you know, one is about their perception of marketing versus sales. I ask, you know, how the marketing and the sales team work together, because I want to know what we're up against. A lot of the stuff that I end up creating, like the customer research or value propositions, span beyond just the marketing team. And so I really want to know how marketing and sales work together in the organization. And I continue to be surprised by that response, because so many organizations are operating in silos. There is no connection between marketing and sales. And you know, we've been talking about this for literally the whole time I've been in marketing. And so it always surprises me that we haven't made more inroads. You know, 1 out of 20 conversations are positive. Oh, we have a positive, great relationship. We love the sales team, and they're involved in our content. They're involved in this. They're, you know, we do ABM campaigns and we work together. And that is like 1 out of 20. The other ones are usually somewhere lower on the ladder of how well integrated or understood they are.
Yeah, I understand. You know, for me, the question usually is like, what is the role of marketing in your company? And every time I'm surprised, somebody looks at it purely as lead generation. Somebody is like content generation. I'm like, how can one question have 25 different answers? You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that one is, again, that was kind of when we just talked about building the credibility, knowing what you're up against.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things that is shocking that marketers, you know, have lost a lot of their influence and clout because the perception now is just on that promotional communication side.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So here's question number two. What do you think is the most underrated marketing skill?
I would say the ability to get buy-in.
Amazing. I used to say this, that it's very, very important to make sure that your customer doesn't just buy your product, but buys into your product philosophy. I absolutely love the answer that you said.
Yes. Yep. I would say, I mean, I think it's the ability, to get customers bought in. I think it's the ability to get internal buy-in. You know, nothing happens. So many projects just die because that step is skipped, or that we make all these assumptions that everybody's on board. So I think it's a fundamental skill, especially as a marketer who is a orchestrator. Really, they're an orchestrator in the business. And so that is a critical skill.
Right, right. Absolutely. And here's question number three. This is something that I picked up from one of your LinkedIn posts. You always seem to recommend involving salespeople in content creation. So what is the thought behind that?
Yes. Well, I think sales, you know, as I mentioned, sales, in, especially in B2B organizations, is the closest to the customer. They're meeting with customers on a daily basis. And so they're seeing things that the marketing team may not. I also get a lot of phone calls from the sales team. I have, you know, a lot of friends that are salespeople and sales leaders, and they will say, can you please, you know, come talk to the marketing team at our company, because we really need help with value propositions, or we really need help with the messaging or the content. And what I found, and based on these conversations, is that marketing is typically producing something that's kind of at that 30,000 foot view. Sales wants something that's at an individual customer view.
Right.
And because of that, there's always a gap that sales doesn't use the content that marketing creates because it's too high level, it's too generic, it's too basic. And if you think about, you know, where we are today, what 70% of the buying process is done online alone by the buyer without engaging the salesperson.
Yep.
So that generic level content is fine and it has a place when it's online, but the sales team doesn't want to use that because it seems too basic. And they want to be seen as a thought leader. This is their reputation, right? If they share something and they're wasting somebody's time and taking time out of their day to share something, they want to make sure that it's something sophisticated, right? That puts them in a good light, that makes them and the company look good. And so that's why I love involving the sales team, because, you know, when they're involved, they're going to use your content and amplify, you know, the results that you're going to see from your content, because they want to share it. Versus, you know, something that you just sort of pass over and say, hey, please send this to your customers. So they're bought in, you know, going back to the buy-in, they're bought into it because they're involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, it helps you create the most relevant content possible. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Love that.
Exactly.
All right. So here's question number four. What is one non-obvious skill that you think should be included in every B2B marketing job description?
I think, you know, again, I would go back to buy-in. I think that's, I don't know that that's ever included in a job description, is how to work sort of internally and collaboratively. I think also a big thing, again, I'm focusing a lot on the internal because this is where I sort of see the gaps, knowing the business, right? And having an appetite to understand the business as well as the customer. It's, I don't know that a lot of this stuff is just kind of missing in job descriptions because it tends to focus so much on the tactical day-to-day and has lost sight of, you know, how to think strategically about the business. And you cannot do that if you don't know the business and you don't know the customer.
Right, right. So if I had to pick, I would pick something like, say, negotiation, which is a fundamental skill, but not many marketers tend to have. And yeah. Interestingly, marketers are at the intersection of, say, you know, choosing MarTech tools all the time. And, you know, I think that fundamental negotiation skills and understanding what is needed and how do you match these two and find that intersection, that kind of an ikigai, is probably really, really missing a lot. And nobody specifically calls out for it or says that you need to have this.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I wrote a LinkedIn post about this one as well.
Oh, really? Like
I did, actually. And that was sort of the thing, because I said, they're not only are they negotiating MarTech tools, but again, they're negotiating just even the projects they're working on, right? And right. How they're spending their time. And when somebody comes to them with the idea of the day, your negotiation hat has to kind of go on with, you know, what's the real motivation behind this? I mean, I can't tell you how many salespeople would come to me and say, okay, hey, I want to sponsor this golf tournament, right? Or, hey, we need to go do some random advertisement or whatever in my market. And really, I had to become kind of this investigator / negotiator of trying to find out, like, what are they really trying to achieve? And that, you know, the golf tournament was not the answer to that. And so.
You probably made Chris Voss really proud.
Yes.
That is amazing. Love it. All right. So here's the final question. If you had to suggest just one metric as the most important metric for measuring a marketer, what would that be?
Of course, you know, ultimately we all want to be able to tie back to revenue yeah. growth generated. I think sometimes that's hard to do because, you know, it might be so far out it's hard to connect all of those dots, right? So it's looking at some of those other indicators, which, you know, I don't know that we've necessarily cracked the code on what is that one metric. I think back in the day there was, you know, they tried to do the net promoter score, right? The number one thing that everybody should know is how well people, we could say that they love your brand if they're willing to recommend your brand. You know, I do think that that is a good one. I think there's a lot of flaws with it. And I don't think that we've come up with one to really replace that. But revenue to me feels a little more short-sighted than something like NPS, which was meant to look at sort of over the life of it, right? Revenue is, what are we doing this year versus there, you know, the metric of like, how are we perceived and what are we doing for the next 5 years?
Right.
And do people like our brand and are they engaged with our brand? I mean, I love like some engagement stats and opportunities that are created. Like what opportunities has marketing helped to create for the brand?
Right.
And I think it spans, you know, marketing is, in my view, a very prevailing sort of function that really should be involved in every aspect of the business because of the brand part. And so it's measuring the impact that your brand is having, not only on the customer side, but potential employees, right? Into employee retention. Do people want to work here? And do we have partners or influencers that also want to work with us? I mean, all of that to me is kind of summed up in this, the goal of marketing, which is to build a really powerful brand that adds value to people's lives.
Right. Yeah. Contribution to building a brand. And that's very intangible and that happens over a long period of time. You know, there was an internal conversation that happened last week where I asked my VP of customer success what he thinks is the most important metric for, say, a SaaS CS organization. And very interestingly, he said that he looks at net retention revenue, which to me was very interesting from a CSM's perspective, because, you know, even he did not confine it just to an NPS score. His point of view was like, hey, it's not just a customer staying with you, but also the customer wanting to expand and work more with you. That tells a lot about your brand.
Yeah, customer lifetime value, I think, is a good one.
Yeah.
I think a lot of, you know, marketers, especially sort of in the SaaS space, are hired to bring on new business and not necessarily grow that business over time, right? What else can we sell to them? What else can we upsell? How do we get them to refer us?
Right.
And look and stay longer and renew, right? I mean, all of that kind of gets factored in versus just looking at the acquisition of the customer.
Yep, 100%. And you know what, Stacey, you hit all 5 questions out of the park with such ease and elegance. This is amazing. Well done.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. You know, I didn't even realize that quickly we crossed more than 15 minutes and it felt like a breeze. But before I say my thank yous and let you go for the rest of the day, I would like to ask you one more last favor. If there is a parting message that you would like to share with our audience, which are predominantly SaaS marketers and salespeople with at least 7+ years of experience. So what would your thoughts be?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a couple things. One, just dedicate yourself to being a learner. That's, I mean, the way you're going to continue to rise in your career is to realize that nothing ever stays the same, that change is always constant, and to develop that. I would also encourage you, if you're interested, to join our online community, which is SOAR Marketing Society, and to connect with me on LinkedIn so that we can continue the conversation. And I'm always happy to help, especially as you're kind of going through your career. And I'm very passionate about making sure that marketing is perceived as a strategic function versus a tactical function in companies, which is why I work with CEOs and marketers to help make that happen.
Absolutely. I was going to anyway ask you, where can people find you? You've already answered that. That's fantastic. But your community, can you spell it out so that, you know, it's easy for our listeners to get it?
Yes. So it's SOAR, SOAR, and then marketing, MARKETING, .club, CLUB.
Right.
SOARmarketing.club. And there's a button up there called community, and you can just request to join. It's a private community. It's hosted on Mighty Network, and it's exclusively for B2B marketers who want to build more confidence and uplevel their skills. We have people from a ton of different organizations in there, from CMOs to people just starting off their marketing career, and consultants, freelancers. So we have a very diverse community, and I believe that, you know, everybody has a unique perspective to share. So we talk about strategy. We talk a lot about, you know, content strategy and marketing strategy and customer research strategy. And it's definitely focused more kind of on the strategy side to help marketers just understand that piece better.
Amazing. I'm sure a lot of listeners today will definitely from here go on to check out the community and join there. But first of all, thank you so much, Stacey. You know, we had a ton of value in this conversation, and I probably will listen to this at least a couple of more times to take more notes out of this, possibly convert this into a proper blog post, because I think this will help a lot more people. So really, really appreciate your time, and thank you so much for making it today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and letting me talk about my favorite subject, which is marketing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much. And for the listeners, that's that from us in this episode. And until we connect with you the next time with another guest and another topic, this is bye from me, Yag. Have a good day and take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.